Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, November the 9th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, what are you willing to fight for? What do you believe in? These are not idle questions. And I will develop what I've just asked you. Two questions. What are you willing to fight for? And what do you believe in? That's coming up right after this. Dear listener, I hope you are well on this Tuesday and that things are going as well as they can go for you. I know that life throws all kinds of curveballs at us all, and some more wickedly curving than others, and more challenging than others. So on this Tuesday, I do wish you, as ever and as with any day, all the very best, and I hope that you are getting through. I mean, I think it's all about one day at a time. I really do. No matter what position you are in this life, one day at a time is really the operating mantra. I mean, yes, you should plan ahead, and yes, there should be plans B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, and so on. But, you know, when we're living day to day, it's got to be the day to day. And, you know, that's really what this is, and I just do hope that things are looking up for you in a world where it's not looking up for lots of people. Lots of people are in very difficult positions at this moment. Perhaps you are one of them, dear listener. If you are, I do hope that the position that you are in right now, that may be very unpleasant or very challenging, becomes less challenging and less unpleasant, and that you see some brighter, more positive times ahead for you and people in your sphere, people in your world. So that's what I will say to you on this Tuesday, or whenever you happen to be listening to this particular episode of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. I'm Omar Moore. Once again, thank you for your particular time and your particular listening ear, because you are the person I'm speaking to, and you are the person who has been so kind with your time to give a few minutes, or maybe the entire episode here, your 100% undivided attention, or even maybe 50%. You may be doing more than one thing as you listen to me, but I do hope that you are well. So I began the opening with two questions for you. What are you willing to fight for, and what do you believe in? And maybe I should have just asked them in reverse. What do you believe in, and what are you willing to fight for? Because there's lots of things that we should be fighting for. No matter where we are on the planet, we should definitely be fighting for cleaner air, better climate, and we should be fighting to reduce the impact of the climate crisis, because we are way past climate emergency. We have to, all we can do at this point is reduce the future imprint and the future horrors. I mean, really, we are way past trying to prevent this. This has been going on now for so many years. And I think that we should all be fighting for a better world and a better climate, a better future, temperatures that aren't so ridiculous in the middle of, you know, the winter, say in a place where it's typically not winter, typically winter during, you know, the winter months. And you've got temperatures in the 90s and 100s in these places where it's typically around 40 or 35 degrees. I mean, this is obviously not because the weather just decided to be very hot that day. This is due to the effects of what we've done to destroy the climate, put a hole in the ozone layer, and do all these things that make things very, very horrible for us and for future generations. So that's one thing I think we should fight for. Shouldn't we fight for a better future? A better future for the next generations, a better future for our kids and grandkids, a better future for the globe at large, a better future for all of us across the globe, not just in the country we live in, but everybody across the globe. I mean, climate to me is the most obvious one. But after climate, what do you believe in fighting for? You see, I kind of now link the two questions. What do you believe in fighting for? That's kind of a perfect hybrid of those two questions that I asked you at the start. So, I mean, for the purposes of this exploration, you know, I just think that climate's one. Number two has to be healthcare. And particularly if you are listening to me now inside the United States, you know very well that healthcare is a massively important thing. We don't have healthcare really in the United States. We don't have a healthcare system. We have a health profit system, or rather, we have a sickness profit system. A group of companies who profit off of people getting sick. That's what we've got in the United States. We don't have medical treatment designed to get people to be better. We have medical treatment designed to make money off of people who are sick. And when you're charged, what, $25 for some Band-Aids, when you're charged, you think I'm kidding about that? When you're charged $12 for a roll of gauze or bandages, when you're charged $7 for an aspirin, one aspirin, you can go down to your grocery store here in the United States and get, if you really go to any grocery store, if you look hard enough, you'll get a bottle of Advil or a bottle of Tylenol for maybe $10. You go to a hospital, you've gone to an emergency room, and you take one aspirin, one little itty-bitty aspirin, and you're paying $7 for that or $12 for that. Seriously, if you've got no health insurance, you're paying more than $10 for that one aspirin. If you've got health insurance, you're paying maybe $5 or $6 or $7 for it. Healthcare is something we should be fighting for. A proper health care system, not a health profit system, a health care system. That's what we should also be fighting for. That's what I certainly believe in fighting for people who don't even have health care. As I've said repeatedly over the last few days, in the United States, we are the only country on earth that ties health insurance to our jobs. So if your ass gets fired tomorrow, dear listener, and you're in the United States, you are SOL. Your healthcare is gone. And God forbid you get sick. God forbid you get injured. It's bye-bye. And then you've got to make these horrible decisions about whether or not you want to sell your home, if you have one, to treat yourself or treat your loved ones because they are the ones that got sick, let's say. And you have to make this really crude decision. Either stay alive or risk dying because I want to stay on my home with a roof over my head. And there's so many people in the United States who don't go to the doctor. Not because they're afraid of going, because they don't have any money to go. Because they don't want to go because they've got this humongous ass bill. And especially, they don't want to go to a hospital. So if they get injured, they refuse medical treatment because they know too well that the system that they are running into here in the United States is a system that's going to be extracting thousands upon thousands of dollars from them for one visit to the hospital, maybe an overnight stay, maybe an hour in the hospital, maybe 2 hours in the hospital or two nights in the hospital. And they could come out of there with a $15,000 to $20,000 bill, depending on what it is. So no wonder people don't go to the hospital for treatment. They refuse treatment. Now, how many times have you, if you're in the United States, how many times have you heard a bulletin, most likely on the radio, and the reporter says they refused medical treatment. They were lightly wounded, but they refused medical treatment, or they were seriously wounded, but they refused. And the reason why they refused, and the reporter never says this, of course, but the reason why they refused treatment is because. Hello? They refused treatment because the bill is going to be sky high, and if you don't have insurance in the United States and you decide to go to a hospital to get treated for some injury, you are going to be, chances are, you're going to be bankrupt. You're going to be filing for bankruptcy because you may not have the money at all to cover it. Most people don't have the money to cover an overnight hospital stay without insurance. If they don't have insurance, they are SOL'd. They are up the wazoo SOL'd, because that means that they could be paying, depending on the nature of the services, they could be paying something like $25,000. At least. So don't lose your job. Don't lose your job. That's the moral of that story. Don't lose your job in the United States, because then your ass is gone. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And very few people actually buy health insurance on their own accord, because it's generally much more expensive than if you have it with your job, because what you're paying comes out of your check that goes towards your insurance. So, you know, you're really not seeing that money dissipate at all. But if you are buying a healthcare plan outside of any employer doing it, you're going to spend a lot more money. And in some states, I get it, there are healthcare reduction programs or programs and systems you can enroll in where you end up paying very little every month for a premium. But the point is, that's few and far between in this country. And we need a national health service like they do in England. I know it's not always been at its best because you've got conservatives in England trying to privatize it. And to some degree, it's already privatized, in part, the National Health Service in England. But you want that comfort. I know the waiting lists are 13, 14 months long in some cases before you can get a procedure in some instances. That's a problem for sure. And that's brought on by lots of factors, including privatization by the Tories. But I would have to submit to you that the National Health Service, even with some of its problems, is much better than what we have here in the United States. My native country is National Health Service, and I remember benefiting greatly from that at a younger age than I am at now. It was gold. It was beautiful. But we are the only country on the planet here in the United States, we don't have that, who doesn't have any kind of, it's unbelievable, that we don't have a National Health Service, a system like that, so that we could end up having all of this health care done for free. And we could not have to worry about paying anything, or we'd pay very little indeed. And it's just scandalous. It's just scandalous. That's something I'd really fight for, healthcare. Because we wouldn't, if we had a healthcare system in the United States, we wouldn't have to trot out a president at a microphone incentivizing people getting drunk in order to get a vaccination shot. I mean, why? Why would we have to actually be doing that? Oh, if you get a vaccination shot, you'll get free beer for July 4th. That's what President Biden said earlier this year in his race to get 70 million people, or 72 million or whatever it was, with at least one vaccination shot by July 4th. That failed miserably. I think they only got to around 56,000 or something, 56 million or something. And the goal was 70 or 72 million. And Biden fell short there. The Biden admin fell short. But I remember just a few weeks before that target point on July 4th, which is what the target date was going to be for to get this done. A few weeks before that, President Biden said, oh, by the way, you'll get free beer if you get a vaccination shot. Like, that you should not be doing. You should not be encouraging people to want to get drunk in order to get a shot. I mean, so you want the shot now so that you can get beer. I mean, that shows you how broken It's not broken at all, is it, though? That shows you how pathetic the response is to a systemic violent punishment. Oh, if you go get a shot, we'll give you some beer so you can go get drunk. I mean, I just think that's so poor that that's what we're doing. And if we had Medicare for All, we wouldn't have to be incentivizing that. We wouldn't have to be incentivizing, well, you'll get drunk, you can get a beer if you just go and get your shot. Because you know why we wouldn't have to incentivize that, and we wouldn't have to appeal to people wanting to get drunk or wanting to drink alcohol? Alcohol? Is because we'd have a blooming healthcare system that would take care of all of this. And we wouldn't have to worry about having to incentivize a damn thing. And I get it, even with a free healthcare system, there'll still be people who go, oh no, I don't want a vaccine, oh no. But the fact of the matter is that it's something that's worth fighting for. And Medicare for All is worth fighting for. It's not some socialist plot. It's healthcare that's designed to treat everybody without them having to pay a dime for it. I don't see why that's such an evil thing. And the only people who think it's evil are the people who are standing to lose a lot of profit from gouging customers in the first place. Those are the people who are all over the airwaves, who control those airwaves, whose companies are littered with ads on cable by pharmaceuticals and by the medical. I mean, come on, we all know how this goes. We all know how this goes. This is something I am willing to fight for, a better healthcare system, because you judge a country by how it treats its citizenry, certainly how it treats its citizenry, the citizenry of that group that is more on the disadvantaged end of it. Those who are in the margins, so to speak. That's how you judge a nation. You don't judge it by how it treats the rich. The rich don't have to worry about healthcare. They don't have to worry about Medicare for All because their healthcare is absolutely golden. So the rich don't have to worry about a damn thing except the usual social and emotional things that anyone has to worry about. Not social necessarily, but the emotional things that people have to worry about in life. But other than that, the rich don't have to worry about a damn thing. Certainly not money, certainly not stability economically, certainly not dealing with healthcare because they can pay for that in their sleep. Women who are wealthy, white women, you know, mainly, and there are women from other groups who may have a lot of wealth, but they are few and far between. But if there are rich white women, they don't have to worry about not being able to get an abortion. They can go anywhere they want in the world to get one. Not anywhere they want in the United States. Anywhere they want on the planet. Tomorrow. Tonight. They can do that. And those particular women who have buku dollars, they won't have any problem getting an abortion. It's in their sleep. In their sleep. They can fly to Tenerife. They can fly to anywhere on the planet to get one. But the average person, not so much. If you're a person who has a fetus growing inside you and for whatever the circumstances are, you have made this decision to end the termination of your pregnancy, you will have to pay a lot of money and you may have to log a lot of frequent flyer miles because there are states in this country where a woman cannot get an abortion. Texas is obviously one of them. I've talked about that in prior episodes. This is unconscionable and it is a human rights violation, to say the very least. So there's lots to fight for. I've just mentioned one or two things. There's plenty to fight for. Right? The question is, what do you believe in? That's the next thing I want to talk about. And that's coming up right after this. Welcome back. And here we are. You know, it's Tuesday. Oh, boy. We are motoring through, and we are almost halfway through November. My goodness. You know, in just about 2 weeks' time, or whenever it is, you're going to have what is called Thanksgiving here in the United States. Now, I don't celebrate it the way that it's supposed to be celebrated or people celebrate it as. It's you know, anyway, I forget that. Let me scratch that. But in 2 weeks' time, that's what people are going to be doing. Giving thanks. And when I do anything like this, it's always about being grateful for, you know, the things in life that you can really look back on and appreciate. You know, we've lost a lot of people this year, you know, but, you know, that's the thing. We life is really precious and fleeting. So we have to take full account of it. And, you know, I've been asking these two questions, the questions, what are you willing to fight for and what do you believe in? You know, because someday we are all not going to be here. So, and whoever listens to this podcast episode in this, you know, podcast episode or any other podcast in years to come, you know, we'll pick this question up and pick up the mantle and hopefully move forward with it when I ask you this other question, which is, what do you believe in? Values are obviously something you believe in, I'm sure. I mean, I believe in values. I think that we vote our values. I'll never forget that from Senator Elizabeth Warren out of Massachusetts, the Democratic senator of the United States. She said, you know, one time a few years back, I think the mistake we make, or some of us make, is to talk about voting your party or voting, you know, on some kind of issue, which is important. You vote your values. And when you frame it like that, I think I remember her saying, you force people to think about what is right and what is wrong. And actually, you reframe the whole discussion. And that should be the tenor of the discussion, not something different. Because if you're voting your values, you are telling people what kind of person you are and what you believe in. So I think, you know, on the heels of that, I've given that thought over a number of months now, ever since I heard Senator Warren say that. I think she said it last year, actually. Maybe this year, too. But I give it a lot of thought here and there, you know. What do you believe in? And you do vote your values. I do think there's some truth, a lot of truth to that. I think that's very clear. But what do you believe in? What do you believe in? I asked you, what are you willing to fight for? And I guess that is the same, almost the same question as the one I'm asking now, which is, what do you believe in? It's quite a question, isn't it? What do you believe in? Because it really does root you to the spot, I think, and force you to think. Because if you can answer that question, and you may have more than one answer to that question, you may even want to begin to explore who you are as a person. Because you can use that question and any answers to it as a base to really probe the depths of who you are as an individual. What is the foundation that you stand on? I know this kind of sounds like I'm throwing these existential dots at you, but what I'm doing, I think, is genuinely trying to excavate that kind of thought in your heart, in your mind, well, in your mind, that causes you to pause and think about it. You know, what do you believe in? I mean, for me, start with me, since I'm asking the question here. I believe in people being treated as human beings that they are, as the human beings they are, and people treating each other the way they should be treated, the way they themselves would like to be treated. It's called the golden rule. Treat people as you yourself would like to be treated. You know, I mean, I don't think that's too complex. So I believe in that. That's one. That's a starter for 10. What about for you? Of course, that's more of a fundamental and very elementary thing. But what about things in life? You know, what about the really big, big things? Or the really small ones, but the small ones are the big ones. The small things in life are the big things in life. That's what you learn as you get older. And you learn to cherish those moments, or hopefully you do. And some people do not, and they don't care to know, or care to want to know how to cherish them. But hopefully when you get to an advanced stage, or a stage of life where you are looking closer than looking more backwards, or whatever the phraseology is for that, very messy terminology that I've just thrown at you. How do you assess things? How do you put things in perspective? What do you believe in? And what of those things you believe propels you forward to keep going in life, to keep going in your day? Those things that you build a foundation on, the foundation I was talking about earlier, what things are rooted to you in that foundation that keep you going? Because when you believe in something, there's a core there. That's something that you are willing to die for. When people say, I'm not going to die on that hill, or I am willing to die on that hill, I've seen that so many times on social media. I'm sure you have too, dear listener. Maybe you have even tweeted it yourself. But I think it's said far too casually. I think it's tweeted far too casually. This, oh, I'm willing to die on a hill for this. I am not willing to die on that. And it just seems like a colloquialism. It doesn't, in some ways, to me at least, feel as if it's got any conviction or heart to it. It may well have in some instances, but when I look at it, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, I think the next logical question is, what are you willing to die for? Are you? Because so many people in the 1960s were willing to die. Not that they wanted to, but they were willing to if they had to. There's very few people on the planet like that now. I mean, I think of some. And I think of, for example, right off the top of my head, I think of what we've been hearing about lately, what I think I talked about briefly yesterday, Joe Madison. The Black Eagle on Sirius XM Radio, channel 126, Urban View. He has a weekday show from Monday through Friday, The Black Eagle, Joe Madison, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Sirius XM Radio, channel 126, Urban View. He's on a hunger strike right now. He is on a hunger strike right now for voting rights. He is not going to stop the hunger strike until the Senate passes the Voting Rights Act and John Lewis Restoration Act, Voting Restoration Act, and President Biden signs it. Now, mind you, President Biden, to my knowledge, still has not signed the infrastructure bill. What he has chosen to do, and I think it's not the worst idea, is to go around from city to city to talk about the infrastructure bill, which he obviously loves as his baby. But why not do both? Why not sign the bill? This is what he should do. Sign the bill, because people need relief. And I know it's more about infrastructure than it is people at this point, but people do come into play when it comes to transportation, it comes to broadband and water and other utilities. So it does come in, people do come into play. But why don't you sign the darn thing now, Mr. President? But, you know, I want to go back to this question again, dear listener. What do you believe in? I mean, Joe Madison believes in voting rights, and he is going to fight for that. What is he willing to die for? In conjunction with my question about that, Joe Madison's willing to die for voting rights. He's willing to give up his life for that. He's willing to sacrifice his life. He talks about this on his program all the time on the radio. What is the difference between a moment and a movement? The answer, sacrifice. And that is what Joe Madison, Mr. Madison, is doing right now. He is willing to die to get voting rights passed in this United States of America once again. He's willing to die for that. He's willing to die for that. He is not somebody who's doing this for show. This is serious. And if he's willing to die for voting rights, and he's been around the block a few times, an activist, a leader, motivational speaker, political activist, humanitarian. This guy has been around for a long time. As I said this yesterday, he was in the March on Washington. He's worked so hard for people. He really cares about the black community. He is a fighter. He's a critical thinker. And if he, at his stage in life, and I think he's in his early 70s now, if he is willing to do that now in his 70s, what are you willing to do? What am I willing to do? What are we willing to do? He's willing to die for voting rights. What are we willing to die for? Not that we want to, not that we're looking to, but what are we willing to put our bodies on the line for? There are people who do things like this. There are people who chain themselves to roads, bridges, cranes, tractors, subway cars, subway trains, buildings. They're willing to get arrested. They're willing, in some cases, to die for what they believe in. There are people all over this planet, a few of whom who have set themselves on fire, literally. I kid you not, self-immolation. You've seen the videos of this. There's a very famous video of this. This guy sat there and burned himself to death. There are people who blow themselves up because they believe in something. Now listen, I don't believe in what they believe in. I'm simply saying, and you know this, people are willing to do that in this world. And they're willing to do that for something they believe in that I do not think is anything but a dangerous cult of toxicity and a bastardization of a proud religion. And next to them, what are we willing to die for? What are we willing to fight for? What do we believe in? I just go back to Joe Madison again. Guy is in his 70s now. And he is not going to be eating any solid food at all until they get this Voting Rights Act passed in the Senate. We need to be calling the Senate, by the way. 202-225-3121. 202-224-3121. You need to call them. You need to call these senators one at a time. But you've got to call them. I'm going to be calling them. I've been calling them. I'm going to continue to call them. And so should you. Please. If you're in the United States in particular, 202 or anywhere, but particularly in the United States, 202-225-3121, 202-224-3121. Either of those two numbers, you can speak to a switchboard operator and they will pass you through to a senator. And you may get a voicemail, you may get a live person, an aide, a staffer. Very rarely at all will you get the actual senator. You won't get them. But if you get a voicemail machine, please be respectable. You can be passionate, you can be pointed, but please don't call people names. Please don't leave any rude messages. You can leave a passionate message, but don't be nasty, because you are going to do yourself a lot of damage, and the senator is not going to listen to you if you are leaving that person some nasty message. They're just not going to. So you have to really evaluate what the judicious, or the efficacy, I should say, is about doing something like that, because that ain't gonna work and it ain't gonna end well. And I just want to say that there are people who are willing to really sacrifice themselves. I mean, it's all well and good when it comes to certain causes, we're willing to throw a bucket of ice over our heads. Remember that a few years ago? We were willing to do stuff like that. Video after video after video all over these social media platforms, and you may have done this too, dear listener, of people throwing a bucket of ice water over themselves. For a good cause, but again, you know, a bucket of ice water, 10 seconds of freezing cold that soaks to the bone. But when you've got something like a hunger strike, someone who is literally making themselves weaker, but for a very important cause, a sense of democracy, you can't really shake a stick at that at all. You really cannot. People have fought. I mean, I think of Pat Tillman, the former NFL footballer who played for the Arizona Cardinals. And he went off to Afghanistan and fought for the country after 9/11/2001 with the terrorist attack that happened that day. He fought in Afghanistan and was killed by friendly fire, so to speak, by his own United States fellow soldiers. They killed him. He was willing to die for what he believed in, and that was protecting the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I bet you if he were around to get today and he were at the Capitol, he would be on the side of the Capitol Police. I do not think he would be with these terrorists who attacked our country on January 6, 2021. Please do not forget to call it a terrorist attack, dear listener, because that's exactly what it was. Please do not forget to call it a terrorist attack on our country, because that is what it was. It was not solely an attack on a building, a federal building, the People's House. It was also an attack on the entire country. And it was also on an attack on every voter. Because these people were fighting, oh, we don't want these certified election results. We don't believe in them. And you got that from the mob, the murderous terrorists, and you got that from 147 Republicans. They're standing up for what they believe in, which is really nothing at all except power. And we need to vote every one of those out. All 147, that's 139 House Republicans and eight Republican United States Senators. We need to vote every one of these people out. I'm going to talk a lot more in the next few days and weeks about these elections coming up next year. I've been doing that, though, for a long time now, the last few months of this year, all throughout the year. But belief is a powerful thing. Look what happened in, I believe it was 1978. Jim Jones, Jonestown, Guyana. He sent 968 people to their deaths. 968 people, 900 plus, to their deaths. Because of this cult, he believed, oh, I'm this, I'm that. You will go to heaven if you drink this, just drink it. If you want to see eternal life, da-da-da-da. And people drank it. Men, women, and children, and babies. They died for something. Maybe they believed in it. They obviously did. The power of belief is so strong. You got people who don't believe that this vaccine is anything. You know, they think, ooh, it's going to bring Bill Gates here. It's like, no, you know, I shouldn't even be saying all this because republishing this stuff does not help anybody. If you've got someone who stands and says that the earth is flat, why are you going to even entertain them and argue against them? They know that the earth isn't flat. It's freaking around. But why are you going to engage with them? Because they're going to just come back to you and say, oh, the earth's flat, and it's clearly round. And the longer you hang around an argument like that, you stick around an argument like that, the more foolish you look. Do not entertain the fool, because you become one even quicker than that fool does. What do you believe in, dear listener? What do you believe in? What are you willing to do to fight for what you believe in? Critical questions. There's so many things, though. But I know this, dear listener. we are going to have to fight. And we're going to have to do that in so many ways. And I'm not advocating any kind of physical violence, because I know there are people who would love to hear yours truly saying things like that. That's for these right-wing Republicans to do, because that's what they always do. They love violence. They advocate violence. That's what they did on January 6th. And there are people who orchestrated and financed that whole violent act and all that dark money that did. And none of them are ever going to be arrested or brought before this investigation that's being done. They're not going to. They're going to just go after the low levelers, the low level terrorists. What about the terrorists that financed this operation? How come we're so clear on getting to, ooh, who financed the Saudi hijackers on 9/11? Who financed them? How come we're so interested in that question, but we're not also interested in, well, who financed these wackadoodle piece of garbage terrorists who attacked our country on January 6, 2021? Why aren't we asking those questions? Why aren't people in power asking those questions? Well, because some of the people in power are the people who financed these terrorists or who encouraged them and backed them and appeared at the Piece of Garbage's rally on that same day, just hours before, half hour before, an hour before. If we had a system that was not out to protect the rich, and we had a system that instead got rid of people who did these dastardly things, we would have rounded up all of these Republicans who helped, financed, or actually appeared at this Piece of Garbage rally on January 6, 2021. We would have absolutely had them out of Congress by now. But they're all still there, which shows you that they are part of a system, which tells you that the system presides over everything. Because if a system cared, just like I said earlier about Medicare, and having Medicare, we wouldn't have to be resorting to, well, you can get a free beer on January 4th if you get a shot now. We wouldn't have to be doing stuff like that, garbage like that. That didn't entice anybody. President Biden and the Biden administration fell really short of that 70 million or 72 million people number to have vaccinations by July 4th of this year. He fell way short of it. Ooh, you can get a beer if you get... I mean, no one looking for a beer. They can go down a corner store and buy a beer, for God's sake. They could buy a case of freaking beer and still not get their vaccine shot. So what are you doing? It's the highest office of the land, and you're trotting out there giving a speech, and in it you say, well, you know, you can get a beer for July 4th if you get a shot. Oh, God. See? You're in real trouble right there. That's why we're in trouble, folks. Incentivizing alcohol in order to try to get a shot. Incentivizing that as the reward for getting a shot. Give me a break. I mean, really? If that's what you're resorting to, you're in real trouble. You're in big effing trouble, man. You can't be going on about, oh, get a free drink if you get vaccinated. Jeez. The whole culture's got to change. That's why I say, what do you believe in? Do you believe in the culture that runs the country you live in? Do you believe in culture? I mean, culture has its importance. It's extremely important. But what does it mean to you? And what kind of culture? A death culture? Or something more uplifting and more affirmative? What do you believe in? And what are you willing to fight for? Entertain that just a few more minutes longer. In fact, entertain it now, tomorrow, and forevermore. Because sooner or later, we're going to have to start to answer those questions and then be about it like Joe Madison is right now. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.